It's a lot later than we normally do. This isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Usually we do this, you know, evening. And now it's really late and, you know, it's way past my bedtime.
It's a school day tomorrow.
I know, it's a school day, yes. And I'm past my bedtime.
Oh, well, let's just get this done
then.
Hi.
Hello, everyone.
Okay, well, remember, we're still going to put the, this is our, well, this is our
oh, bit. Oh, okay, did I come too early?
I'm not touching that one. Let's just...
it's late. Yeah, what happens when I'm...
Yeah.
I have had no sleep and I'm...
Yeah,
I talk a lot.
That's good. Anyway, let's just leave a nice little pause so I can chuck the music in and okay. We can get going.
I will not laugh.
Sure.
Ouch.
It's going to be one of those. What the? History. 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 Hello and welcome to What the History, your fortnightly bits of bizarre history to make you say, What the History?
And nom noms. Nommies.
And that too.
Hello!
I am Trevor Holland and I am joined by...
Susie Holland? I don't sound too convinced about my own name there.
No.
Hello, I am Susie Holland and this is What the History. Join us. All of you.
Yeah, we're not doing the After Dark edition.
Oh, bow chicka bow bow.
We're saving that. Really? We're saving that in case we actually get a Patreon and, you know, do extra episodes for people.
Yes, yes, Patreon. Hello, everyone.
We don't have one. We're just thinking about it. If you think it's a good idea, let us know. We'd love some validation.
And donate. Donate. Show it. Give us money to show how much that you appreciate this idea.
But they can't give us money without the idea. We need something for them to give money to.
Okay. Is that how it works?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm thinking we should have put this before the opening thing as well. Okay. Anyway, what do
Hi.
You... oh, it's...
Oh, okay, we're... all right. We are going to get on to What the History.
Yes, we are tired. It may show. Susie!
Oh, no. I'm not tired. It's just past my bedtime.
I'm tired.
You just watch Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. You can't be that tired.
It was weird. Anyway, Susie, what do you have for us this fortnight?
All right. Hello. I have an interesting story that I came across when I first started at university, or Endeavour College of Natural Health. I call it uni because that's what everyone seems to relate to. But I did a wonderful subject, and I passed it. Really, called pharmacology, and I came across this story about a woman called Mary Mallon. Now, okay, just bear with me on this one. You might have heard of her, but I'm not going to reveal it just yet. Okay, now, what if you were carrying a disease that you had no symptoms of, so otherwise known as asymptomatic, and time again you got called out when people around you got ill with that disease, and 3 recorded fatalities. And then you went on the run to evade authorities and even changed your name to hide yourself. And when you were quarantined and released on the proviso that you would not put yourself in a position to make people sick again, and you go and do it anyway, only to be captured again and spend the rest of your life in quarantine. But all the time, no one allegedly actually taking the time to explain to you how and why you are a health risk, only that you are one. Now, such is the story of Mary Mallon, who earned the nickname of Typhoid Mary in the early part of the 20th century. Mary was born in a little village in County Tyrone in Ireland in 1869, and to explore this story further, we need to go back to when Mary emigrated from Ireland to the United States in 1883, where she was employed as a domestic servant, working her way up to the position of cook for wealthy New York families. Funny how that she was born in the village called Cookstown. Yeah, okay. It was sort of like a preordained thing, I think. And she loved cooking, and she was really good at it too. The problem was the people she cooked for ended up getting sick with typhoid, a bacteria named Salmonella typhi, which causes fever, diarrhea, and or constipation, so it's really lovely, skin rashes, and stomach pains. Now, its mode of transmission is food or water contaminated with the bacteria. So people turned to the cook, Mary, to see if she was ill. Now, Mary wasn't. She was a picture of health and was actually the first person in the US to be known as an asymptomatic carrier of the disease. So it's something that I wouldn't be really proud of, but anyway. In 1906, Mary had begun to work as a cook for wealthy banker Charles Henry Warren, who rented a house on Long Island's Oyster Bay for the summer, taking Mary with him and his family. Between August 26 to September 3rd, 6 out of the 11 people contracted typhoid fever. Charles hired sanitary engineer George Soper to track Mary, as he had his suspicions that the cook, and not the butler, did it. George first thought that it was the freshwater clams that was the culprit behind the family being ill and questioned all the sick people, including Mary, who reportedly had a mild version of typhoid symptoms. But the clams were safe, as not everyone who was sick had eaten them. George kept an eye on Mary, because he had a bit of a suspicion, when she got back to Manhattan, as she had left the employ of Charles, whether by resigning or being sacked, it isn't known, and he did some digging on her previous employment and found out that out of the 8 families that she had cooked for, 7 had contracted typhoid fever. Yeah, that's pretty high there. But attempts to obtain blood and feces samples from Mary proved to be unsuccessful, with Mary chasing George off her latest cooking premises by brandishing a meat fork at him. So she had a bit of an inkling. George returned later with authorities, who she evaded, but she was given away by a piece of her dress that was caught in the door of where she was hiding out. Now, at this time, Mary had no choice and had to give samples, which of course tested positive for typhoid fever. Mary was quarantined for 3 years on North Brother Island in the East River, not far from the Bronx. Mary attempted to sue the health department for her freedom with negative for typhoid test results, which she had obtained independently, and was reportedly bankrolled for this venture by newspaper magnate William Randolph Hearst. But this was denied in the Supreme Court, so she didn't get her freedom. And Mary wasn't happy with her quarantine, saying, and I quote, "Why should I be banished like a leper and compelled to live in solitary confinement with only a dog for a companion?" Because that's who they gave her as a companion. They couldn't have her being around people. End quote. Not that bit about the... Yeah. By her account, if she didn't have the symptoms of typhoid, she couldn't be spreading the disease. But she didn't ever wash her hands prior to handling food, preferring to ignore the sanitary measure, which aided the disease's mode of transmission. The press named her Typhoid Mary in 1909. When she was released by a new health inspector in 1910, it was done on the proviso that she would never cook professionally again. Mary didn't keep her promise, with the health department losing sight of her after her release, usually by her aliases, because she had quite a few. Reportedly, she wasn't trained in another job that suited her, so she just went back to cooking. Now, this is where it gets a little bit messy again. Now, 5 years later, she was the cook at the Sloan Maternity Hospital. Yes, working around mothers and babies in Manhattan, working under the name of Mary Brown. Now, funny enough, when patients, doctors, and nurses began getting sick with typhoid fever, her co-workers jokingly began calling her Typhoid Mary, not realizing who she really was. Oh dear. I bet they had their own What the History moment when they realized how right they were. Because since her release, she had worked in hotels, restaurants, and institutions under assumed names. Now, this little folly earned her another trip to North Brother Island again, where she spent the rest of her life in quarantine, passing away on November the 11th, 1938, from pneumonia, brought on by a stroke that she had 6 years earlier. And her age was 69 when she passed. Her autopsy, and there is actually debate on if this was done, showed live Salmonella typhi bacteria living in her gallbladder. Mary was offered an operation to remove her gallbladder during her first quarantine, which she declined because her doctors thought that that's where the typhoid, or typhi, was hanging out. Her toll, according to her obituary in Times magazine after her death, placed 51 cases of typhoid fever and 3 fatalities at her feet. So ends the tale and story of Typhoid Mary. She's an interesting little character, isn't she?
I've got nothing really. It's just like, you know, obviously it was never properly explained to her, so it's hard to sort of like paint her as a bad person. She was just doing what she knew, and if she wasn't sick, she was just assuming she didn't have it. I mean,
yeah, it's pretty blinded though, because everyone around her was getting typhoid, and yeah, I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't know. My job here is not to cast blame or aspersions on another person. My job here is to report, and sometimes I may put my own personal thing into it, but that's not my job tonight.
Fantastic.
Yes, over to you, good sir.
Thank you very much. Is another one where I can't really do an actual segue or connect our two stories.
One's a man and one's a woman. There you go.
Yeah.
They're both humans.
And mine has nothing to do with disease. So, what do you find annoying about having to go to work on a rainy day? Is it the lack of drive to leave the house, less opportunity to get out and about during the day, or having to deal with crowds carrying umbrellas? Personally, I am at a height where many umbrellas have the opportunity to poke me in the eyes. And also, people who walk with umbrellas open under awnings and covers?
I don't have that problem. I'm so short.
Okay, lucky you.
No. I have other places that people bash
me. But look, while I find the parasoled masses a bit of the pain in the you-know-where, I would never feel the need to hurl garbage or abuse towards them. So why would one man, one solitary individual, be the subject of such scorn and derision for daring to walk under an umbrella on a rainy day? To find out, we need to meet Jonas Hanway, born in August 1712 in Portsmouth, England. Jonas made a bit of a name for himself with his eyewitness reports of turmoil in northern Iran in the mid to late 1740s. However, Jonas's main claim to fame came not long after his return to rainy old London town. It was generally considered that during a rainstorm, the rich would take covered carriages to go about their business, while the less well-off would remain soggy. So imagine the surprise when Jonas Hanway started strutting through the streets, being kept nice and dry under his umbrella. To have such a portable, easy device to keep the weather at bay should have been inspiring. However, there were some strikes against this invention. First up, the umbrella itself was the work of a Parisian merchant, Jean Marius.
Jean Valjean.
Lovely. Who took inspiration from the parasol, popular with nobles looking for a little sun protection, and created a lightweight, foldable version that was also waterproof. For Jonas to carry such a device immediately drew jeers. It was unmanly for an English gent to be carrying on like a, quote, mincing Frenchman, end quote, was unheard of.
Oh, dear.
Many Brits thought the use of an umbrella showed a weakness of character.
God.
The umbrella had no place on the streets in England, and here was this troublemaker flaunting one.
He's a naughty, naughty boy.
The coach drivers had even more reason to dislike Jonas and his waterproof weapon. It was a threat to their business. If more people were to use umbrellas, then there would be less need for carriages to carry people along the soggy streets. Along with particular rude remarks and insults as to the effeminate nature of Jonas's crimes, the drivers also threw garbage and physically threatened him. It's even reported that one carriage driver attempted to run over Jonas in the street. Jonas reportedly reacted by, quote, giving the man a good thrashing, end quote, with his umbrella. Seems like poetic justice to me.
Hell yeah.
On top of this, Jonas, ever the controversial figure, published an article in 1756 in London titled, and just take a deep breath of this one.
Oh, God, guys. Good
An
luck.
Essay on tea, considered as pernicious to health, obstructing industry, and impoverishing the nation, with a short account of its growth and great consumption in these kingdoms, with several political reflections in 25 letters addressed to two ladies. So not only was he threatening English manliness, he was also criticising tea.
Now that is unforgivable. No one criticises tea, ever. Well, they shouldn't.
Tea's not very good.
Despite the criticism,
Jonas stuck to his guns and continued to use his umbrella for the next 30 years, and it had an impact. By the time of his death in 1786, umbrella use in England was on the rise thanks to this brave pioneer. Jonas is also remembered for spending much of his later life working with the Thomas Karam's Foundling Hospital, and spent much of his time organising food, clothing and exercise for the patients. While not being wealthy, he was considered quite a philanthropist, and his generosity earned him a memorial in Westminster Abbey. While history may remember him for his What the Umbrella-based adventures, I'd like to leave this tale by reading the inscription on his memorial. Quote, "Sacred to the memory of Jonas Hanway, who departed this life September 5th, 1786, aged 74, but whose name liveth and will ever live, whilst active piety shall distinguish the Christian. Integrity and truth shall recommend the British merchant, and universal kindness shall characterise the citizen of the world. The helpless infant nurtured through his care, the friendless prostitute sheltered and reformed, the hopeless youth rescued from misery and ruin, and trained to serve and defend his country, using in one common strain of gratitude, bear testimony to their benefactor's virtues. This was the friend and father of the poor." End quote. Jonas Hanway, you're awesome.
He is awesome. I'm really proud of this guy, except the tea thing. I mean, come on. But yeah, I can forgive him, okay? I know I said it was unforgivable before, but I can forgive him for what else he did for the world. I mean, not everyone likes tea. That's more tea for me. I like Earl Grey a lot.
I mean, the only reason I looked at this guy was I heard the story about this poor guy using an umbrella in London again and getting pelted with garbage, and to find that he was such a philanthropist and so generous that he's been, like, memorialised at Westminster Abbey was just, like, quite a bonus. So I've got respect for this guy. He stuck by his guns and he did good. So, yep. James Hanway.
Yay! Jonas
Hanway.
We salute you, sir.
Absolutely.
And give me all your tea, because you obviously don't like it.
I don't think he cares anymore.
I don't think he cares. But when I go to London next year, I will be looking up this guy's memorial in Westminster Abbey, because I will be going.
Lovely.
I can't wait. Hi.
Excellent. And on that note, we would like to thank you all for listening to this episode of What the History. We do generally talk in pretty broad strokes and pretty briefly, but if you do want to know more, all our references are down in the podcast description, just down below there, or you can also find them on our homepage, wthpod.rufusproject.com, where you can listen to all our previous episodes or leave comments or anything on there as well. If you want to get in touch with us, you can do very easily. You can find the What the History podcast page on Facebook. Find us on Twitter at pod_what. Use the hashtag WTHpod. Or even send us an email to WTHpod@rufusproject.com.
Yeah. And if you've got a research topic that you'd like us to research and report on and put our own What the History flair upon it, go for it.
Absolutely. I'd also like to take this opportunity to put in a little shameless plug.
Shameless.
I'm sure regular listeners know that I'm not averse to a bit of, shall we say, geek history, since I've covered Night Trap and Polybius on this very podcast. So if you're interested in classic gaming, we've actually launched a new series on the Rufus Project YouTube channel called the One Credit Challenge. So that's where I'm playing old arcade games with the point of it being how well can I do with just one credit. However, if you do jump on there and look up the Centipede one, you'll hear a familiar voice with Susie playing the game and reminiscing.
And got over 10,000 points.
It's impressive.
Oh, God, it is impressive now.
I'll include that link down below as well, but yeah, definitely check that out. That's a bit of fun there as well.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. It was good. And I actually want to do Frogger. I know you want to do Frogger too. I think you want to do Frogger. And I also want to do Pac-Man because, fun fact about me and Pac-Man, I have never made it past the first level. I'm going to go and embarrass myself again.
It's fine. There is no judgment on the One Credit Challenge.
Thank goodness.
because, you know, what happens, happens. That's all it's about.
What happens on one credit challenge stays in one credit challenge.
Forever on YouTube.
It's like and, Fight Club.
And on that note.
First rule about Fight Club.
And on that
note. We're not sponsored by Fight Club.
I think we need to stop getting distracted because it's late. And so, again, I hope you enjoyed this episode of What the History, and I hope you will join us in a couple of weeks' time when we come back with two more bits of bizarre history to make you say,
What the history?
See you then.
Bye. Good night, everyone. Bye. I'm